This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss major rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court and the cases still to come. So far, the court has kept abortion medication legal for now, blocked a ban on bump stocks, which could open the door for even more lethal weapons, and upheld a federal ban on guns for domestic abusers. Major decisions are expected to come next week. Joining us is Chris Geidner, a journalist and MSNBC columnist. His Law Dork newsletter covers the Supreme Court law and politics. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hello.
Well, Chris, what are your thoughts about this term and what is different? I mean, it seems like people are waiting on these major, major decisions, and they're going to come down in one fell swoop, probably next week.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to not basically to not judge a term until it's done. There's a reality that if a decision isn't coming down yet, it's because they're still working on it, which probably means that there are disagreements. And so while there have been some decisions thus far that have been sort of overwhelming, there are, as you said, a lot of big decisions that are still out. And as of now, the only opinion day on the calendar is Wednesday, but I don't think we're going to be getting all 13 decisions on Wednesday. So I'm not sure if we end up finishing next week or might even go into the week before the 4th of July. But I do suspect that we will be done by or before the 3rd.
Have there been any surprises for you so far?
I guess the right answer is no. Obviously, I knew everything they were going to do. I do think that that today's decision was in United States versus Rahimi. The Chief Justice upheld the federal ban on firearm possession by people who have an outstanding domestic violence order against them. And that decision was 8-1. Clarence Thomas was the only dissent. And that some of what is in the Chief Justice's majority opinion, as well as some of the concurring opinions, does suggest that the 22 decision by Justice Thomas in Bruin that struck down the New York law that basically that Thomas's history and tradition test had a capacity of going too far and being interpreted too far. And the Chief Justice wanted to try to minimize the number of bad cases coming up to the court on that issue. And so he kept the decision for himself today and laid out a test that I think he at least thinks will allow some of the sort of gun restrictions that, like this, he imagined the vast majority of people would think is reasonable to be upheld.
This is a really important one. Again, the Supreme Court, by a 8-1 ruling, upholds the federal ban on possession of a firearm by those with a domestic violence order out against them. And Chris, I actually saw your tweet this morning when this came down, and it made me think of a piece that we featured on this show by Alana Vagianos of HuffPost. The leading cause of death for pregnant women is homicide, most often by an abusive partner with a gun. She writes, Texas is forcing victims to stay pregnant while making it easier for abusers to get guns. I mean, it's a horrific, but such an important story. So, I mean, this is a major, major decision, given that so many women are killed by their abusive partners with guns.
Yeah, but and this is a point that a lot of people have been making this term, and I think when we get to the end of the term, it will be sort of apparent across the board that it is notable that you're right. It's a huge ruling, but it's also a huge ruling that sort of like when there are quote unquote wins for the left, they're rulings that just keep the status quo. This is a long standing law. This is not a new law that was passed that it's getting its initial challenge. We're seeing if it's going to be upheld. This is long standing law that for the longest time, nobody had a question of whether it was constitutional. And the win today just kept that in place. And so I think when you see overall at the end of the term, I think what you're going to see is that basically you have some decisions that move the law further to the right, and then you have some decisions that kept the status quo. But you have very, very few decisions that are actually wins for the left, as in moving the law leftward.
Right. I think this is a great point because the bar is pretty low. I mean, in many countries, this is not even an issue that you have to take something like this all the way to the high court, whether a domestic violence order, someone who is accused of domestic violence should or should not be able to have a gun.
Well, and this really does come out of the Bruin decision that the Clarence Thomas's decision in Bruin set forth this historical analog test that you have to basically find a historical analog to the regulation at question. And basically what Chief Justice Roberts had to do today is sort of say like, well, by that, we didn't mean you need to find like an exact match. That would be silly. Now, of course, the person who wrote Bruin dissented. He said, no, it's not silly. It's what I wrote. And so I think the chief was trying to say that he was just clarifying what Bruin meant. But given that Bruin's author dissented today, I think the reality is that the chief sort of trimmed the edges off of Bruin.
Let's talk about the other gun case and the gun ruling. When a gunman in Las Vegas killed 60 people at a concert in 2017, the video's just beyond horrific. Officials focused on a gun accessory known as a bump stock, a device that allows a rifle to fire at nearly the rate of a machine gun. Bump stocks were actually banned by the Trump administration after that horrific shooting, but the Supreme Court struck down the ban. So tell us more about that decision.
Yeah, I mean, this is a situation where, I mean, honestly, where I sort of start to wonder what is the chief thinking here? Because what happens is that anytime that the chief justice is in the majority, he assigns the decision. And so it's really interesting to think about the fact that while the chief justice was cleaning up the Bruin mess in Rahimi, he also assigned the bump stock case, Garland versus Cargill, to Thomas to write that decision in another gun case. Now, the difference between the two cases is that the bump stock case was a statutory interpretation case. It was about whether the law banning machine guns included the bump stock under its prohibition of machine guns, whether the bump stock qualified as a machine gun, which was what the ATF was saying. And so while it's a bad decision, while there's a really good argument made for why it counts by Justice Sotomayor in her dissent, the fact of the matter is that it was just a statutory interpretation decision. It was just saying, does what does the law mean and does this fit? And so therefore, Congress could pass a law that bans bump stocks explicitly that wouldn't require ATF to make a decision. Now, then, of course, that would go under this Bruin test and somebody would challenge it and somebody would need to figure out whether it fits the sort of Bruin test as modified by the Rahimi decision today and whether a ban on bump stocks independently is constitutional. But at least Thomas's decision doesn't, in the bump stock case, doesn't rule out that possibility.
Today, we're talking about Supreme Court decisions with Chris Geidner, a journalist and MSNBC columnist. His Law Dork newsletter covers the Supreme Court law and politics. Chris, you actually wrote an entire article about Moore versus U.S. You wrote, narrow tax, criminal law-related SCOTUS rulings leave key questions unanswered. The Wall Street Journal hyped Moore versus U.S. as a wealth tax case. There was no ruling on that, but lots of skepticism. Only Justice Jackson signaled openness. So tell us about that case and that ruling.
Yeah, so we got that decision yesterday. This was a case that when it was granted, it's technically over. It's a challenge that this couple, Charles and Kathleen Moore, brought to, again, another Trump administration decision, or not decision, but part of the tax law passed under Trump. It's the mandatory repatriation tax. It was a one-time backward-looking tax over basically, American controlled foreign businesses that, basically, we're keeping their money overseas. They were not giving dividends to their shareholders. And so even though they were American-controlled companies, they were never being taxed. And so in order to deal with that, in the giant tax law passed under Trump, they put this mandatory repatriation tax that basically looked at your shares, if you were a shareholder in one of those companies, and made you pay a one-time tax for the gains obtained by that company. Now, the question before the court was whether or not the 16th Amendment allows taxation of unrealized sums. And what ended up happening is that the court didn't decide that question. What Kavanaugh did instead is said, well, there actually was realization. The foreign company realized income. And so that this isn't a situation where there's not realization. And he instead, and the majority, which was just a very narrow majority, even though the decision looked like it was a 7-2 decision, there were only five justices who signed on to his opinion. And it was the liberal appointees, Chief Justice Roberts and him. And what they said is that, that because there was realization, this can be treated just like we would treat any other pass-through entity, like partnerships or closely held corporations with less than 100 members, where the federal tax system has regularly allowed us to tax the individual shareholders as opposed to just the company. And so it really ended up being this case that sidestepped the reason why the case was taken and the reason why the day after the court granted cert, the Wall Street Journal had an editorial saying, this is a wealth tax case. If the court upholds the Ninth Circuit ruling, that will allow Congress to be free to issue a wealth tax, which, of course, you would actually need a Congress that wanted to pass that, which obviously Speaker Johnson has no intention of doing. So that's more a hypothetical issue than anything. But nonetheless, in Kavanaugh's decision, he spent half of his decision basically saying everything that the court didn't do yesterday, that they didn't resolve this wealth question. They didn't resolve what would happen with a wealth tax. They didn't resolve the realization question. And so at the end of the day, it wasn't really that big of a decision. And you had two dissenting justices, Justice Thomas and Gorsuch, saying they do think realization is required. So they did resolve the question. And then you also had Barrett and Alito, who were technically, they concurred in judgment. They agreed with the decision here, but it was based on technicalities about concessions that the Moores had made below. But they nonetheless also said that they think realization is a requirement. So we basically have four justices on the record saying realization is a requirement, and the majority opinion saying that poses a different question and we didn't resolve it today. And I strongly think and wrote that it sort of suggested that at least Kavanaugh, if not Kavanaugh and the Chief Justice, would be on the same side as the other four conservatives if they actually had to reach that question.
Today, we're talking about Supreme Court decisions with Chris Geidner, a journalist and MSNBC columnist. His Law Dork newsletter covers the Supreme Court law and politics. So we've got very important cases coming up next week, and we'll talk about those once the decisions come down. I do want to ask you about the headlines about Justices Alito and Thomas and ethics questions, which you've written about.
Oh, please do.
Yes, at Law Dork. And I just want to read from a piece that came out yesterday in The Hill. Representative Jamie Raskin and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are asking whether Chief Justice John Roberts has taken any action to investigate conflicts of interest. A letter from the Oversight Democrats addresses lavish trips and undisclosed gifts given to Justice Thomas, as well as reports detailing the displaying of two flags, one upside down, associated with the Stop the Steal effort at Justice Alito's homes. What are your thoughts about major media coverage of all of this overall? And then where do you see this going?
I mean, I think that the coverage has gotten a lot better. And I think that the treatment I wrote, I mean, now a few years ago, about the fact that, like, that the Supreme Court thinks it's special, but it's not, that the Supreme Court, the justices are federal government employees, and also they're people, and they're fallible. They make mistakes, and they're government employees. They're public officials, and we should treat them just like we would other government officials. We should treat them with the same skepticism. We should hold them accountable for their actions in the same way. And it is, we're seeing more and more of that from the mass media. Now, of course, that was given a good push by ProPublica's reporting last year, that properly won the Pulitzer. I think that, the biggest example recently is that the Washington Post sort of, had some egg on its face when they had to acknowledge that, they actually had looked into the Alito flag story, at least the one at his house, back in 2021, but hadn't published the story at that time. Whereas when the New York Times found it this year, they obviously reported it quickly and strongly, and importantly, because it does matter. And I think that the more that publications do that reporting and are made to feel like they are doing something improper if they don't do that reporting, that's good for us.
Do you think that there's enough coverage, and do you think enough reporters, major reporters, are connecting the dots and looking at the bigger picture? We know that for decades, conservatives have worked to capture the courts. I mean, I'm reading from Politico right now, 2023. Leonard Leo used Federalist Society contact to obtain a $1.6 billion donation. We know that they gave Trump lists of names to choose from the Federalist Society. So it's not like this is just sort of happening on the sidelines. I mean, this is a concerted, decades-long effort. Do you feel like that is being reported enough and those dots are being connected in major media?
I mean, I think there's a good amount of coverage of the Federalist Society's impact. I think that some of the important elements are things like, I mean, when I published, for example, I got a hold of Justice Alito. He filed under a 2022 law, justices now need to file periodic transaction reports when they make stock transactions greater than $1,000 within 45 days of the transaction. And also under that law, those reports are placed online. And I noted that in August 2023, Justice Alito had sold shares in Anheuser-Busch stock and purchased shares in Molson Coors right around the time when the anti-trans boycott of Bud Light was going on. And there were questions about whether, like, had there just been a stock sale, that might have been one thing. But the fact that he sold the one beer and bought the other beer on the same day definitely raises those questions. He hasn't said anything about it, but I think that treatment, if a politician in the legislative branch did that, we certainly would be asking them that question. And I think that the same sort of treatment needs to happen with the justices. And that's why I published that story. And it got lots of attention. He obviously still hasn't answered because he doesn't think he needs to.
And Senate Republicans blocked Democratic-led efforts on an ethics bill. So do you think that this will go, this just happened recently. Do you think this will go anywhere?
I mean, it's not going to go anywhere in this session. I think that there's a very strong effort by Roberts. And I think sort of the theme of my newsletter yesterday with all of these narrow decisions, even when like, they weren't really narrow issues, or they just avoided the main issue, like we talked about in Moore. I think that Chief Justice Roberts is trying to hold down the fire. We'll see if he's able to accomplish that through the remaining decisions, especially when you've got the emergency abortion care, when you've got the Trump immunity case, you've got the January 6th case. I think that he's hoping to keep the temperature down on the court while we go through the election season. But I think that if attention remains on the court as it should, that you could very well see a Congress that's in place next year that is interested in getting legislation out of both branches that can go to President Biden in a second term that will set some enforceable rules of ethics for the court. And I do just want to say there are
and these, we're almost out of time, Chris.
There are these questions that Alito and Roberts have raised about whether such things are enforceable. Let's keep in mind, they file their financial disclosure reports that have been in place. So they acknowledge that if Congress passes laws, that they are going to follow them.
Chris Geidner is a journalist and MSNBC columnist. His Law Dork newsletter covers the Supreme Court. You can find a link at yourcallradio.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll definitely cover next week's Supreme Court decisions and also do a few shows about the most important ones. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.